Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 335. I'm Tim Elliott, and I'm on with Graham Thickens.
Yeah, from prestigious West Bloomington. Yeah, baby.
And, of course, Phil Wilson.
Not so prestigious, Lakeville, Minnesota, but still a darn nice place to live.
It's prestigious.
And our buddy Steve Borsch has taken the week off, and he'll be back next week, which is our Halloween show.
Oh, gosh.
Which,
what do we do on our Halloween show?
We get dressed up, I guess.
And, okay.
It makes for a good podcast when we're all dressed up in our costumes.
Yeah. I'll wear my costume pajamas next week rather than my regular pajamas.
So what day is the beggar's night then? Is it Friday night or is it Saturday night?
I don't know.
For the kidlings. I don't know.
It is Saturday.
No, it's Saturday.
Saturday
night.
For sure. Yeah.
Saturday night.
Yeah.
Cool.
So there was a few events this past week, and I guess let's start off with mini analytics. How did it go, Graham?
Oh, it was amazing. I'm still recovering. It was absolutely a blowout great event. You know, and I feel like I ran a marathon running the startup showcase session all day. I never left that room. I was like totally taken up all day long. There we had like seven rooms, so like seven tracks, and there were well over 1,000 registrations.
Wow.
So we packed out the Optum campus in Eden Prairie again, and it was a life sciences focused event. So that's an extremely strong sector here in Minnesota. So this is our biggest event. I say our because I'm on the board of Mini Analytics. And
it's okay. You can say that.
And and there's six of us on the board and an amazing group of volunteers that make this thing happen. We had a VIP reception the night before at Summit Brewing, which was fun too. And as Dan Atkins said at that event, he said, this is, you know, this Mini Analytics thing is really a crowdsourced organization, you know, and it wouldn't happen without all the people. But I'll tell you, the energy and engagement of the attendees was something amazing. And we had so many great speakers, you know, many of them from out of town. I mean, we had the CIO of Mayo, as well as the CIO of Optum here in town. But we had the author of a great book called Epic Measures. One doctor, 7 billion patients, and that's a guy named Jeremy Smith. And then we had the CEO of Kaggle, which is a very hot site for if you're into data and if you're a data scientist, you love Kaggle. Well, he came to town to speak. And then we had umpteen sponsors. We had the CEO of MarkLogic speaking. And we had other sponsors like Hitachi, Cisco, Cloudera, Hortonworks, DataStax. The Nerdery came in as a sponsor, which was nice, and some community sponsors as well, Life Science Alley and MHTA. So, and the Startup Showcase, I had 10 companies doing pitches in the afternoon, so that was pretty fun. And they were all, obviously analytics-related and healthcare-focused. So it was tremendous.
Any consumer plays where they're using like Fitbit or Apple Watch data to do stuff?
Well, yeah, there was. We had two out-of-town startups, really three, because I had one from San Francisco that wasn't doing a pitch because they just raised $100 million called Clover Health. So they weren't really pitching in the afternoon. They did a talk in the morning. But a couple of the startups in the afternoon, and I'll put the link in the show notes. You can read about the startups. But one was from the Washington, D.C. area called Be Well America. And they're partnered with Fitbit and Jawbone and others. And then we had some great local startups. One called Prevent Biometrics is for concussion intelligence involving a mouthpiece that is just fascinating. It turns out it's Cleveland Clinic technology that they licensed, and it actually lights up in the front to tell the coach that there's a problem with the player. And there's a way to read it, see the data coming through on a mobile app. Now, they're still early days. They're just getting started, but But that was fascinating because, as I told the COO who presented, I chatted with him afterwards, and he presented a great problem early on. It's like, is the next generation of kids not going to be able to participate in sports with all these problems with concussion, effects living on? And he made the point that, you know, if it's treated properly, or if, you know, if it's caught at the right time, there is no permanent damage, you know.
They're all going to be playing ping pong and billiards.
Yeah, right.
This is good news for the chess club.
That's right, yeah.
And the debate club, yeah, right. But, you know, as I told him after, I said, there are people out there, sports commentators and sports writers, including Patrick Royce locally at the Tribune, that say, you know, in another 10, 15 years, there will be no more football. It's done. It's going to be over. He's convinced, you know. Huh. And you know,
this is the guy, get off my lawn.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Kids, get off my lawn.
Enjoy it now while we can.
Yeah. Look,
the technology will abound and we'll figure it out. But also there's too much money at stake at this point in time for, you know, in professional sports to shut down the system completely. There's just too much money in it. Yep. And there will always be somebody that will say, yeah, I'll, you know, it's like boxers for years. Yeah. I'll get punched drunk for this amount of money or that amount of money. So there is a group of people that are willing to sacrifice their body for that sort of thing. So
yeah,
I don't think it's over. Yes, I think there's more responsibility for us as parents of kids playing sports to make sure there's a little bit less damaging contact going on. But I mean, the sport can be played without head, you know, helmet-to-helmet contact and things like
right.
that.
Flag
right.
football. I played flag football when I was in middle school.
Yeah, I don't think that'll go well, but yeah.
Pro flag football. Oh, baby, here we go. Oh, and what that, an idea. Well, if you, that
wasn't that
down.
The lingerie league?
Yeah, if you played it with women in bikinis, that it would be a huge deal.
Oh, right? Oh yeah. Now we're talking.
All right. So let's get back on track here. So, social media breakfast yesterday. Phil, did you get a chance to go down there?
Yeah, I was actually moderating the panel.
That's good that you showed up then.
Sure. Yeah, it just was really good. You know, it's really funny to walk in. I know there's a Lifetime in Target Center. I know there's been, you know, every time I go to Target Center, you see the signs. Well, there's a Lifetime. I had no idea how big it is down there in the basement of Target Center. It's massive. And it is a really nice facility. So I was really pleasantly surprised when I walked in. Of course, not inspired to exercise anymore, but I was very pleasantly surprised. We had a good crowd, the sold-out social media breakfast. They had done a really nice job of taking the Ultimate Hoops gym that they use there to turn into a sort of a conference space. And we had a great panel of experts from the health and fitness industry to talk about social media and health and fitness. We touched on a lot of things, including, you know, where does the content for what they're producing come from, and talked a lot about, thought leadership and privacy and HIPAA and all of those things, and a lot of legal discussion, because in that industry, it's almost difficult to talk about anything as far as healthcare goes. Fitness, not it was a lot easier. Tony Saucier from the Lifetime was on the panel, and so it's a little easier for like Lifetime to put together a social media campaign and allow a lot of discussion. It's a little tougher for United Health Group, or excuse me, Health Partners, and Boston Scientific, and Blue Cross Blue Shield, who were all represented on the panel. So it was a great event. And here's a question that I have every time I go to a social media breakfast, and I haven't been able to get to all of them, but I get to a fair number of them. It seems like every social media breakfast I go to, there is always a huge amount of first-time attendees.
Yeah, isn't that something?
So my question is, what's happening to the other ones that are why are they not coming back?
Well, you know, it's social media has been around now for 6-7 years. I mean, well, social media breakfast goes back that far, doesn't it? To like 2007 or something.
Yeah, it does.
You know, and there's so many folks that know the space so well and, you know, are busy doing their thing where they can't maybe break away to go to these things anymore.
Yeah.
But But the programming is always excellent. I've always found it fascinating when I get a chance to attend again. But you know, but I agree, you don't run into all the old timers as much as you used to, you know.
Yeah, and I'm not saying I miss necessarily anybody. I just wonder what happens to them.
Yeah.
So,
well, they go on to other events or something, but it just, you know, it just goes to show you there's a continuing need for people to get up to speed with what's going on. Well, and it keeps changing, you know. I mean, the new channels keep popping up and happening all the time, and new ways for brands especially to engage on social media. It's a never ending battle to keep up with it all,
right?
You know, and measuring it, you know, is a big thing, which we take on in Mini Analytics, and will at our next event on marketing analytics. That's a huge subject on its own.
Right. I think it has to do with the topics. So if there's a topic that's not in your wheelhouse, people say, I'll just go next time.
They rotate out of it. Yeah. But all in all, Michael Roventin had put on another good event, and you know, it was interesting. You know, because Lifetime, there in Lifetime, on one side was a table of the bacon and the bacon. They'd put together some really nice sandwich, breakfast sandwiches and breakfast wraps, and on the other side was the cups of fresh fruit and orange juice.
Wow.
And it was like the yin and the yang of Lifetime. It's like, you know, we know you want to eat this stuff, but you really should eat this stuff.
So
it's like,
yeah,
bacon and health and fitness is like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. Most events are just bacon and bagels and cream cheese of every variety. And oh, man, they're good. But they had to bring in the fruit on this one.
And, you know, again, in
the fruit.
I didn't realize Lifetime actually served that sort of stuff. And they really did a great job. So thanks to them for joining. And also thanks to the panel, which was Perry Finsand from Boston Scientific, Laura Kaslow from Blue Cross Blue Shield, Matt Lechner from Health Partners, and as I said, Tony Saucier from Lifetime. They really were a great panel. You know, as a moderator, you always kind of hope for a panel that will really handle the discussion themselves. All you have to do is say, you know, be able to be there to jump in if you need to or so. And these guys did a stellar job. I didn't have to do much. It was great. So.
Oh, that's great. See, I moderated a panel yesterday, and I pretty much had to drag it out of every one of the panelists.
That's the one thing you hate to see.
They look
at you like, what do we say?
what's next? Or what's coming next? You know, right. One of them said to me in the beginning, take it easy on us, Graham. And I go, hey, I've told you the questions in advance. You know, I'm not gonna trick you into anything, you know. But sounds like you had a really good one.
Yeah, they were great. They were great. So, and a good crowd too. Lots of questions at the end. I never ever remember to get off into questions soon enough because they always run out of time. So, anyway.
So last week we were at the IoT Hack Day, and I just wanted to say that half the teams won. See that? It's there were four winners or four projects that were recognized. Sound Scout was the first place, which was the Raspberry Pi deal that listened to aircraft and other noise in the neighborhood, which sounded interesting. And then something called Go-Go Gadget, which I guess I missed, and Smart Pillbox, which I remember.
Yep.
I've heard of that.
Tied for second,
yeah.
And then the Jukebox Backpack, which was a fun project that came in third place. So
that's Christina Dervuge and her father. Put that together. Yeah, that was great.
It was basically a backpack with a jukebox in it.
So
and you could tweet songs and it would play them.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Love that.
It was a good idea.
I think that the Sound Scout thing, I think that all of us that were there, I know Graham, you couldn't make it, but when we were there, and they stood up and said, this is the project we're working on today, you know, at the beginning of the event. I think all of us kind of looked at that one and said, yeah, I think that's really an interesting concept. And I think we all of our interest was piqued by that, I think.
Yeah, no, it was a good one. And I think that Steve mentioned it, too, at the beginning of the podcast as one of the standout projects. And it, in fact, was.
But it's, you know, he's looking at it because he wants to be able to use it against his, you know, his ongoing battle with this
right
flying fly airport. Airport.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
all those corporate jets that come in and out.
Yeah, I hate those guys.
Well, Steve,
I was going to say, speaking of tweeting songs, I went on a streak this week when I read that the lead singer of Three Dog Night passed away at a young age. And I you know, was just devastated by that because they're one of my favorite all-time bands. So I tweeting all these songs off their best of album, you know, one right after another. But anyway, that would have worked nicely for the jukebox backpack.
That's Corey Wells. You should probably
Corey Wells. Yeah.
I don't know if is 74 a relatively young age.
Well,
I mean,
well, especially since they're still performing. They've been still performing.
I think for a musician, that's ancient for a rock and roller in the 60s and 70s. That's ancient.
Yeah, it might be, but he didn't live the typical life. He lived a very quiet life in upstate New York, I think. You know, maybe lived on a farm or something. And
yep.
And his bandmates were just devastated, and you know, came out with great public announcements, and you know, about it. And so yeah, so I tweeted, you know, never been to Spain, the Family of Man, Shambhala.
I was going to say,
and
he's on the road to Shambhala
song.
Oh boy.
And then I closed it out with one of my all-time favorites, Out in the Country.
Oh, yeah.
So there we go, Three Dog Night. Mm.
Wow.
It's sad.
It is sad.
It is.
Okay, well, getting back to the Minnesota stories here, Steve did leave a Twin Cities business story in the notes about the mayor of Duluth, Don Ness, and his quest to bring entrepreneurship to the North Shore.
Yeah, it's a cool story.
And he is on his way out, right, as far as mayor?
Yes.
And, yeah, that's what it looks like. Yeah.
He served a couple of terms at least, I think, and is moving on to the next thing, writing a book. Yeah, the guy who wrote this story, Gene Rebeck, do you know Gene?
Yeah.
At Twin Cities Business, he moved up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's now their northern Minnesota correspondent. So he did a really great story recapping all the great things that have happened up in Duluth, and it is such a great place with the, you know, the tourism business up there has just exploded. Mm-hmm. But you know, they have some other really cool things going on, you know, with the airplane manufacturer based up there, and Cirrus.
Who's up there now?
Cirrus. They've actually been there since 1994, but they're expanding.
Okay.
Pretty rapidly. And Maurice's, the retailer, is based up there. They've been growing quite well. And but there is a, you know, there's a software community up there, and you know, and lots of cool things going on. The whole Canal Park area, I mean, the way they improved that over the years. Have you guys been up there lately? I mean, it's just, it's spectacular the way they turned a bunch of dingy old warehouses into, you know, it's lakeside right there at the you know, near the lift bridge. And there's so many, you know, watering holes, restaurants and hotels. And it's pretty amazing, and lots of great things to do. So.
So, and I think Don Ness takes a lot of credit for that. So,
he, in the article, he's rather humble, and you know,
which
he
said,
"Well, yeah, a lot of it started before he got there, but there's no question he did a lot." And and I, you know, I personally think surfing on Lake Superior has done a lot to bring attention to Duluth, but that's just me. You know, that's my buddies up there. That's actually well north of Duluth, mostly a half an hour or so north of Duluth. But anyway, there's all the outdoor thing up there. You know, have you guys heard me talk about this before? When I met the guy who runs the outdoor program for the UMD, the outdoor studies program or whatever they call it, something like 90% of the students at UMD sign up for that. They're so into the outdoor stuff, the kayaking and the hiking and the you know, surfing and everything else they do up there. It's,
which is interesting for a campus that's completely connected and underground a lot of the time.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
They don't ever go outside.
Yeah. Well, you can if you want, but.
Yeah, but you can't. Yeah.
There are some days that you don't want to go outside.
No.
I would not want to be driving on those city streets when they're icy. I'll tell you, it is crazy.
It is the pajama school, that's for sure.
So. Over at the Business Journal, Mark Riley had a story yesterday about Stratasys. And
a bit of a hit. Right?
Yeah, yeah. They're writing down their investment in MakerBot, and they're making less than people expected, Wall Street expected, and it doesn't look good.
Well, it always comes back to that whole, what's the ultimate market going to look like? And then that's, we've talked about it so many times on the show before. It's, where is the play for anything beyond, prototypes? What else are you going to make?
Yeah, I think it's not a consumer play. So the MakerBot was a bad decision. But there, I think there's certain verticals like auto parts and things like that that might make sense for on-demand parts. But it's an industrial kind of a deal. It's not a consumer thing at all.
Right. I mean, unless you're a Jay Leno consumer that needs to make, a hood ornament for one of his many collector cars.
How many billionaires or multimillionaires can you sell these things to?
Yeah, I mean, he's probably bought multiple 3D printers, but he's a little different than your average Joe consumer. Yeah. But yeah, the Tribune had a good story this morning in the business section too, and I guess the stock took a 10% haircut.
Yeah,
it's pretty bad, they got a long way to dig out of that.
Do you call that, the usual term for that? Is that a correction? Is that what that is?
Well, yeah, it's
you got to play we knew that was coming.
Well, yeah, it's been a volatile stock up and down, like many of the 3D printer stocks, I'm sure are, but they're saying now that it's looking like the consumer market is just not happening. The analysts are negative on the consumer part.
It's an enthusiast thing. They had one at the Hack Day last
week. Yeah, they did. Yeah.
And, nice. It's cool and all that, but we're not going to make enough stuff to really...
Nor can you afford to make enough stuff because the plastic alone is expensive. So, yeah.
I could see going to a Staples or, some sort of service bureau and paying them to make a case or whatever I needed, at the time, but not owning one, not like a jet printer is. Although at the end of the story, they say that Hewlett-Packard's looking at this space. So who knows? Maybe they'll...
Oh boy!
Be acquired.
Yeah, that's strange. Because HP has been so successful. Yeah,
yeah.
I wouldn't put a lot of faith in that. Yeah. They've got their own problems. And did you see they're exiting the cloud business?
Somebody's got to do it.
That cloud. I don't know if that cloud's going to make it. Graham.
Well, it's the public cloud business. They finally threw in the towel and realized they can't compete with the likes of Amazon and Google.
Yep.
Don't forget
Dropbox. They're the 800-pound gorilla.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, also, they've got their problems too lately, though.
Along the same note, the company that always still surprises me is the Deluxe Corp, and they picked up Datamix.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of this company?
No. What, Deluxe?
No. Yes, no. I mean, I'm obviously Deluxe, but I mean Datamix. I've never heard of these guys.
Yeah. But $160 million for that deal to buy it's another small business support analytics sort of thing. Mm. I still wonder if Deluxe is ever going to be able to do anything other than make checks. Is their business good? Or
That small business focus has really played out for them. You remember the first startup they bought was PartnerUp when we had social media breakfasts over there. Remember
Didn't that thing take a big dump though? Didn't PartnerUp kind of go?
No. I think that formed the core of that line of business, and that's their growth business, the whole small business sector, and they've made multiple acquisitions since then. This has got to be the sixth, seventh, eighth acquisition at least in that space. But I agree, I had not heard of this company. It was privately held, and I'm not even sure where Datamix was headquartered.
It's out east somewhere.
But it's expected to contribute another $7 million in revenue during the rest of the fourth quarter alone. And, you know, so they're, I don't know, their stock is up. I think their stock has been a really big performer this last year or so, from what I understand.
It's interesting. I just Google partner up. It's now part of a Google community. It doesn't even stand on its own. So
Google community.
Yeah, partner up has packed up and moved to Google Plus communities.
Great.
So
they've hitched their wagon to Google Plus. That's not a good idea.
Huh. Yeah. Huh. When is Google going to shut that down?
That's a matter of minutes, isn't it? Aren't they?
Well, that's what the rumor is. I go there every day. There's some good communities there, and I don't know. Hopefully they don't shut it down, because I don't know where the communities would go.
Yeah, I'd probably go back to Meetup.
Yeah.
I don't know. Huh.
There's HubSpot too, right? I mean, it can
be
HubSpot.
I guess.
Yeah, but I don't know. Or God forbid, Facebook.
Oh, brother. All right, so the next story is something you flipped in, Graham, this Techstars and
Ryan. Yeah, Ryan Brochar was announced as the
managing director.
Oh, is that what they call it? I thought it was just like program director or something.
No, managing director.
Whatever.
MD. He's the MD of the Techstars Retail Accelerator.
That sounds even more important then. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was a surprise announcement for that, I think. Although, in a way, it doesn't surprise me, because he's been very close to Boulder and the Techstars folks since he went to graduate school at CU, I guess it's called, in Boulder, and met those guys early on, you know, and was active as part of the Boulder startup community going back to those days. And he continued to live there, I think, after he finished his master's. And so in a way, it doesn't surprise me that he would take that role. But we were chatting about it yesterday in the reception after the Mini Analytics event. And, you know, he also runs a small VC fund called Matchstick Ventures. And so he's taking this on, even though he has that other job. So we don't understand how he can do both, but maybe he can. I guess he can, or he wouldn't have done it.
He's the Jack Dorsey of the Twin Cities.
There you go.
Right?
Oh, he'll love that. Yeah, here, Ryan. There you go. You can't. And that harks back to Steve Jobs with Apple
and Pixar. Yeah.
So, yeah. But you know, I don't know how much of a full time role the Techstars position will be, but he will, I'm sure, house himself within Target, where the startups will be housed. And I forget how many they said they'll accept. Maybe they don't even know. But I think the next group of startups that they take in, the first group, I think it starts in June, as I recall. And we actually had on the closing panel yesterday at Mini Analytics, we had the lady from Mayo, who's the Techstars program manager for that Mayo Techstars program, which is a little different. It's just a 2-week program where the startups come in just for a short amount of time and learn a lot about the Mayo and make connections there. But of course, the Target program will be a full 3-month accelerator program, which is the typical way that Techstars does things. So good luck to Ryan.
Yeah. Well, and Julio did a story, which is on a press release from Best Buy about their consumer survey for the holidays. And there's the 15 top gifts of 2015, according to Best Buy. And
they are?
The iPad is number one. Wow, that's a shocker.
What?
Well, you know, the shocker to me was the Bose Quiet Comfort noise canceling headphones at number 2.
Those are pricey, I'll bet.
Yeah, they're what, $250, I think. Something like that.
Yeah, that's pricey.
Yeah, it is. For headphones it is. And then the MacBook was number 3. So I don't know. It's who knows.
I don't understand iPad being top of the list. You really think that's really the top of the list?
No, I don't think so. Everyone's got an iPad that
Everybody's
wants an iPad.
Everybody's got an iPad, yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe they want the new one.
Well, that's, you know, people complain about they want faster. You know, my son was complaining about that. And I says, get a new one. The chip's a lot faster than the one you got, you know. So there you go.
Yeah. It also says in here that the Apple Watch. Okay. I got
not even
you.
On the list.
Yeah, Apple, it is. It's 12th. It's 12th. It's right.
It is. Oh, it, yeah. There it is. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Now that surprises me because according to Tim Cook, it's just going to be a huge, you know, holiday gift. So. I'm sure
so.
He doesn't like seeing it down that low. Let's see how it comes out after Christmas, though. Let's see what the rankings are then.
There's two Ultra HD or 4K TV sets on this list too. I think Best Buy is trying to put one over on us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, come in and get those 4K sets, right?
Yeah. And number 10 was the Dyson Absolute Bagless Cordless Vacuum.
Yeah. Is that, that's on my list. I don't know about you, Phil.
And then this list sucks literally because you've got Dyson and iRobot Roomba. So
Right.
Oh, I could see sucking in this list.
I could see Phil giving his wife the Roomba for Christmas, yeah, right? Thank you, Phil, for this wonderful, thoughtful gift.
Yeah. That's the classic thing you're never supposed to do with your spouse, with your female spouses.
Yeah.
Is give her a vacuum cleaner for a major holiday. They do not like that, you know.
Well,
it's I'd like you to do more work around the house. Here, take this thing.
Well, never any electronics of any kind, you know.
Yeah, right.
Oh. I mean, you can get away with clothes and stuff like that, but jewelry is usually the best.
Actually,
my wife loves a phone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She'd love that stuff.
Oh. Okay.
Oh, and I gave my wife an iPad Mini in a red leather case a couple years ago, and that's her favorite toy. She loves it. So there you go.
Graham, you probably should say red leather and toy in the same sentence. That's really
right.
All right. Oh, it's by the way, those noise canceling headphones, did you guys see the price on those?
I thought it was $250.
Nope, $299.
$300.
$300 to block out the world, my friend.
Wow. $300.
That's crazy. And you see so many people on planes that have those things. I figure those people must fly a really whole lot to justify buying that thing. Yeah. I had to gulp hard to spend $150 on my wireless headphones. I thought that was a lot of money. And they're okay.
I never have invested in wireless headphones.
Oh, I got to have them when I'm watching the iPad in bed. I don't want to be, you know, be getting tangled up in a cord. So,
are you flipping around a lot there while you're watching?
Yeah, I flop around, you know, stand on my head.
And then
put this Best Field Nation story.
No, I was just going to say Best Buy is shipping online orders for free.
Even if it's like $5.
No, I think you have to have a certain threshold.
Okay.
But
$25, yeah.
Yeah, 25.
Yeah, it's to compete with Amazon.
Okay, gotcha.
Which is $35 if you don't have Prime.
Right.
Oh.
You know, so they're 10 bucks less.
Looking forward.
They got a slight leg up there.
And looking you can always
phone delivery soon from Amazon.
You can do that ship to store thing for free too at Best Buy.
Yep.
Oh yeah, right.
So,
who
put this story in from Field Nation?
For Field Nation.
I did because that was a follow-on to the blog post I did about Field Nation. And being that it is a St. Cloud startup, at least began there, the fellow at the St. Cloud Times, that Mitch LeClaire, that's their technology reporter, delved into it and wrote a nice story quoting Rob Weber. And even slipped in a couple of blurbs from yours truly. So
wait a minute.
There you go.
Wait a minute. Where's Graham?
Oh, you got to go way down. You know, my quotes always end up at the bottom. You know, way below the fold.
During a conference in Redwood City, California, Graham Thickens told the Times of a trend he thinks is taking place in Minnesota startups. They raise large amounts of money they don't really need, and saying they're not using it. Okay.
That was my blog post. And then remember
I know a lot of young entrepreneurs that would kill to raise a Series A investment round of $1 million, Thickens said. Nice job. Nice job.
Heavily quoted here.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, he caught me out when I was out at that conference. I got on an early morning call with him, and He had seen my blog post. In fact, Rob Weber pointed him to it. And you know, I mean, it is crazy how much money the well-scaled local startups have been taking in. And what it really comes down to is, yeah, they may not need it right now, but they're taking it while they can get it. Because that's the old adage in the startup world is raise money when you can, not when you need it. And that's exactly what they're doing. And they're beefing up their balance sheets. But remember when Clay was on, Clay Collins from Lead Pages? Because he was one that actually was saying they didn't touch any of that $5 million they raised initially. And then they raised couple of rounds, I think. Well, didn't they do like a $27 million round? And so it's like, wait a minute, he didn't need the first money, so now he's raising more money he doesn't need. Mm-hmm. And but did you hear him say when we had him? He said, "Oh, we are using it now." He wanted to slip that in. It's like, well, yeah, to put on that conference they did this last week,
right?
That what was it called? The name of the conference, whatever. I'm blanking now, but that cost him some dough. So there you go. They are spending some.
That's good.
And then right after I wrote my blog post where I alluded to the initial big round that Code 42 raised back a few years ago, the $52 mm-hmm. million that came out of nowhere, bam, you know, their first money they ever raised outside. So within like 3 days of my blog post, they announced they took $85 million more in a Series B. Mm-hmm. So there you go. But they've, you know, they're going to be using it, I'm sure, to crank up their enterprise business and spend big on marketing. You know, most of this money does get earmarked for that kind of growth strategy stuff. Yeah,
Code 42 is moving more into the security space, though, aren't they? Isn't that the plan? Isn't there their growth curve? They want to get more into the security and privacy stuff.
I haven't really looked at it lately, but I suspect that would be the case. I'm sure the new guy has big plans. The new regime. There and he had no trouble attracting money because of his background at Eloqua, which was acquired by Oracle for large amounts of money, hundreds of millions. So the guys, you know, got that past success stamped on his back, and yep. Those kind of guys never have trouble raising. If they've got a plan, you know.
So if we kind of take a look outside the borders of Minnesota and some of the bigger tech stories of the week, obviously one big announcement was YouTube offering a commercial free option called YouTube Red, which costs you, what, 10 bucks a month?
$9.99 if you're an Android user, but if you're iOS, it's $12.99.
Oh, those dogs.
Well, no, it's actually Apple, because Apple charges 30%.
Oh, that's why.
So you're paying the Apple upcharge.
There you go. Yeah. Well, as a stockholder, yeah, go for it.
Everybody do that. Do either of you guys?
Everybody, please do that.
Do the ads on YouTube, I guess to ask it a different way, do you watch enough YouTube videos where the ads bother you?
Hell no.
Because I don't. It's not worth 10 bucks a month for me at all.
But I can tell you that my son does and my daughter does. You know, anybody at the age of 25, yes, YouTube is a very big source of video. And, you know, speaking from the BuzzFeed angle, that we generate a lot of traffic through a video on YouTube. So as far as the advertising goes, I don't think it's intrusive enough to justify $10.99 or $12.99
maybe you can't answer this, Phil, but as a publisher to YouTube, does BuzzFeed are they excited about this? Because
I gotta tell you,
you'd want to run the ads, right?
I gotta tell you, I can't tell you for sure. It's not something that's in my wheelhouse at BuzzFeed. I'm sure that they were well aware of this long before anybody else was, but I can't tell you what my colleagues at BuzzFeed are thinking of this right out of the box. I could probably do a little follow up and let you know, but I'm sure I could send you off to our PR person who could tell you all sorts of things. But I know that, you know, we're working towards a video app and that sort of thing. So
in the you know, you get a play, and I'm sure they're still counting all the plays for the subscribers to this. Does the advertiser get something out of it?
I'm sure
the publisher, I guess, would get something out of it, right?
I would hope so.
Out of the play, yeah, okay. So. So it may be okay. You know,
we'll find out.
We'll have to see. I'm just not super excited about it.
Yeah. I mean, again, it doesn't, we're not big users, but there are big users out there. And it may very well be worth their time. I mean, you think about losing, what, sometimes 30 seconds off the front of a pre-roll or something like that.
Those 30-second pre-rolls suck.
Yeah.
I don't mind. I can live with 10, 15 seconds. Yeah. But when they go to 30, oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but as someone who has a YouTube channel, which I haven't even looked at in probably a year, I used to post, interviews I did at conferences and stuff. And, so maybe more people will watch my stuff now. Or ads wouldn't even be appearing on mine, though.
Well,
would they? Depends
on, well, you have to get to a certain level of users tap into that.
Well, I certainly have never gotten there. So.
Yeah,
everyone,
I never have. So.
Go check out my channel. There's no ads on it, and you don't have to pay $9.99 a month.
Just out of curiosity, what do you guys think of the strategy that they're passing along the price of Apple's take? They're passing it along to the consumer.
Well, it makes sense. Why should they make 30% less?
Well, shouldn't they? Don't you think it was what would be wise for them to build it into the business plan to make it the same cost? Because basically, it's going to hurt their business with iOS people who have a lot of phones.
Yeah. Well, true, but the iOS people, they're more money bagsy, so maybe they'll get it. Maybe they'll get it for them, right?
But I agree with Phil. I think it's a poke in the eye. I think this is.
I think it's calculated.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's calculated.
It's calculated, yeah.
But still.
Yeah, it's like, take that, Tim Cook.
Yeah. Guys, come on. Stop with the playing and, everybody play nice. So, but, what are you going to do?
So a lot of mergers and acquisitions in the semiconductor space, and one I wanted to point out was that Western Digital is buying SanDisk. Which I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, SanDisk is really kind of lost a lot of ground, haven't they?
Well, their product is good. I've bought a lot of their product over the past few years, but I'm now buying Samsung's cards now because they tend to be faster. So maybe they're losing a little bit of ground, and that merging with Western Digital, maybe both of them together will be able to compete a little bit better.
Perhaps.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, the Western Digital being a spinning disc company primarily, they all want to get more flash mojo, and that's where they have to go.
Yeah.
As spinning disc gradually goes away, and some would say not so gradually.
Yeah, it's going to go pretty quick.
Yeah.
Well, with all the SSD drives.
But yeah. I so miss the whir of the hard disk.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. And all those little metal head assemblies that they make out in Hutchinson. Oh yeah, it's such a wonderful business.
I also wanted to put in this Jack Dorsey story because he's trying to get developers back. We're really sorry.
We're sorry.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. The best tweet, and did you see that VentureBeat story where they stepped through everything bad Twitter has done to developers?
Oh, no.
It's like at least 10 of them. I should put that in the show notes.
I do. That would be great.
It was great. It's like the guy went back and said, okay, here's the history of this thing. And then he highlighted a tweet at the bottom from my friend Donnie Burkholz, who was at Mini Analytics yesterday. And it was like, you can only get away with this so many times.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, the tweet that's in this TechCrunch story is pretty funny, too, where the guy has the picture of Lucy holding the football for Charlie Brown, and it says, Twitter to offer new tools for app developers.
Yeah, the developers are having a field day.
I just got a kick out of reading through the comments on that story. So there was not one good, thanks, Jack. We're so looking forward to working, blah, blah, blah. It was
trust Twitter, period.
Yep. Oh, man.
Yeah, no, I think that ship has sailed, and they clearly haven't figured out what they're going to do with, with their own apps. So they, I don't know.
Well, and their customer support still sucks. They're inaccessible. They're hard to deal with. It's you know, that bout I did with Comic Twit of trying, you know, having my domain or having my actual Twitter name taken away and then, you know, trying to track it down and just, it was like talking to a brick wall. It just, you know, questions go in and nothing comes out. So,
all right. Well, in the interest of time, let's just hit this last one. Phil, you put this in with the Tesla Model S.
Because, you know, I was so effusive, and I know Steve was talking about how great it was. You know, they awarded this insane rating of 103 out of 100, and this was the best car ever that Consumer Reports had reviewed. And now they're taking that all back because of reliability issues. If you go to Consumer Reports now, you'll still see insanely high ratings on you know, the drive and the experience, and gosh, it's just the best thing since sliced bread. If you look at the reliability, it sucks. It just plain sucks. They say, I believe, 47%, a negative 47% on the rating for reliability. So
wow, that's not good. Well, I'm skeptical of any car that's made like an iPad. You know, it's basically glued together.
Right.
So I like bolts, personally.
Well, there's a lot of bolts on your car now, but there's also a lot of glue on your car now as well, Tim. I mean, there's still glue in that sucker. So
I don't know.
I don't. Yeah. Is it? It's not like glue is holding the wheels on, though.
when it's minus 30 outside here, you know, I do not want to test the glue in my car. So that's I stand by that. Now, if I live in San Diego, I might feel differently.
Yeah.
You know, I might say, hey, it's okay.
I still wouldn't mind having one of these. Reliability is, owner satisfaction is like 97% on the S. And the reliability is, what is it? It's, minus 43. I apologize. So based on the latest survey, we expect the reliability of new models will be 43% below average.
Well, they got to work on that.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know,
get on it, Elon.
Elon's already on it. He's already saying these are old models that have already been, all these issues have been addressed. And, you know,
don't worry about it. Just keep buying them then. Okay.
Yep. He's the golden boy. Everyone will believe him. It doesn't matter anyway. They'll believe him no matter what anybody else says. Well,
I think you've got to look at it as it's an early adoption thing. This is a, they know that it's, you know, less early than it was 2 or 3 years ago, but it's still. You know, making a luxury car that's totally electric. You know, I think if it gets a rating of over 80, which most cars gets most cars that you buy on the market today, you're going to be satisfied with a 70 to 85 point rank with Consumer Reports. That's what you see. Because I think the best-selling car, which is the Honda Accord, has always been one of the best-selling cars, and Consumer Reports has always rated it very high. I think even the best rating for that's 85. So,
well, I'm still waiting for Mr. Fusion.
Yes, exactly. Well,
from Back to the Future, since it was Back to the Future Day earlier this week.
Oh yeah,
we watched Back to the Future 2, which of course went back to the on the day. On,
absolutely,
what was that, on Thursday.
Was absolutely, the worst Back to the Future ever. Was just,
I didn't think it was terrible. It still holds up.
That's the weakest link in the whole trilogy.
Well, it's not The Empire Strikes Back. I'll give you that, but it's not terrible.
Yeah, but 1 and 3 were really good compared to it. So.
1 was really good. 3 was okay.
Oh come on, that was great.
Anyway, all right. So let's talk about the cool thing of the week.
Really.
Yeah, Graham, what's your cool thing of the week?
Well, you know, I'm kind of, I haven't been real big into gifts, but I'm a big Instagrammer. Well, I mean, I don't know if I'm big, but I like using Instagram, and this new boomerang app that they came out with sounds pretty cool to create GIF-like looping videos. They're like 1 second, I believe, loops. Huh. So I'm anxious to play around with that and kind of brighten up my Instagram page a little bit. I don't do too many videos, but maybe I'll try some 1 minute loops like this, which I think you can do like just by using one. How do they do it? Do they do it like the new iPhone where you actually get a series of shots And I don't know how they do it. I haven't drilled into it that far yet, but I'm going to try it.
Okay.
Well, it says, how does it do this? A single press on the capture button takes a burst of 10 photos that are automatically stitched together in a 1 second video.
It's an animated GIF, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It all
Uh-oh.
Is differently from an animated GIF, but I don't know how it would differ to a GIF.
Yeah.
Or even Apple's live photos on iPhone 6S, although it doesn't capture audio. So that's okay.
Right.
Hmm. All right.
But anyway, there you go. That's mine.
All right. So what's yours, Phil?
Well, you know, mine is more of a welcome trend rather than a cool thing, but I'll use it as an example of a cool thing, which is the Fossil Q. Mm-hmm. The Fossil Q is Fossil's entry into the smartwatch market.
And it actually looks like a watch.
Looks like a watch.
Like and a real watch.
There's there's a bunch of different designs. I think mine is probably the more classic one, which is what is the Q Grant, I believe is what it's called. So, check that out. It's really nice. It's a smartwatch that looks like a watch. So, and again, I think this is just the beginning of more integration of the smartwatch, features and, classical design. So I like it.
It looks good. It's the one of the first Android Wear watches that I would actually consider buying.
Yep.
Although it's $300, so it's a little pricey at this
stage.
Price.
Ooh.
But it's up there. It's sort of Apple-esque price.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But yeah, you know, you got to pay for the good looking stuff. So
true. Yeah. It's jewelry, right?
It's jewelry. Yes.
All right. So mine is a Kickstarter project. It's called Angie, and it's a home security system, which is basically a thing that looks like a router or some other cylindrical device that sits in your house, and it rotates 360 degrees with a camera. And it looks really cool, and of course it jacks into your smartphone and your smartwatch, and it'll be $430 when it ships. So this is a cool-looking device.
Okay.
If you're into home security.
Can you talk to it?
You know what? I don't know. I don't think so.
I mean, it kind of looks a little.
It looks like that
echoey.
It looks like that thing that you sent back to Amazon.
Yes, it does.
Hey, you can talk to it. It does have voice control.
See, there you go.
Wow.
There you go. I'm really thinking about going back and getting that sucker back. But I'm
getting the Echo back.
Taking the Echo back, and I think I may do that. But
wow, I would wait until Black Friday because they're sure to have a deal on that.
Well, I would hope so.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they'll have a deal on it like they did that time they had that big sale.
The $99 one.
The big sale that they did where they, I think they released one for $99 or something like that.
Yeah. All right. Cool upcoming so events. Yeah. What's coming up? We got a couple new ones in here.
You know, I got an email from our friend Jake Duranstad up at Myriad Mobile that he's on a panel at Space 150 on Thursday late afternoon. Called Scale, Future Proof Your Enterprise. There's a couple other people on the panel, and there's an Eventbrite to sign up. So it seems to be a public event for those that want to catch up on the latest on mobile for the enterprise.
Interesting.
Yep. And of course, we got Product Camp coming up on November 7th.
And as we started the podcast today, tickets were going on sale for Ignite. I'm not sure if they're. You suppose they're still available?
They go fast, don't they?
They always go very fast. So
that place can hold a ton of people, though. It's like 650 capacity.
Is it at Riverview? Is that where it is?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So is that the first time they've done it there? I don't know. That's such a great venue.
Have they announced who's going to talk?
I don't think they've necessarily laid out the...
The speaker list.
The speaker. No, wait a minute.
Ooh, real-time follow-up here on the podcast.
There you go.
Yes. Ty Goodwin, Mary Jo Schiffsky, Carrie Delaria, Patina Park, Devlin Shaughnessy, Monica Nilsson, Noshina Hussein, Patrick Maloney, Jennifer Kane is speaking. My goodness, there's a lot today. That just gets us to intermission. So
wow.
Okay.
Amy Anderson, Joe Laha, Alex and Ian Toffee, man, there's no John Smiths on this group at all. So, but yeah, check it out. And for some reason, there's no link to buy tickets on this. Oh, wait a minute. Is that it? Let's see if there are any tickets. There still seem to be tickets available.
Tickets, because yeah, we don't want to.
They're $15. So.
Oh, they are. Okay. Well, that keeps, you know, that keeps
the riffraff out.
Keeps the riffraff out. So,
yep. You gotta show up. You gotta pay your money, so you'll show up.
Ignite is always a good time. So if you gotta check it out, check it out.
Yep.
And there'll be all sorts of things that'll happen between now and next week. And of course, we'll talk about it on
the Minivate Gang podcast.
Oh, by golly, we will.
Everything up here froze to ice. When home, sweet home, see.